Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Larry Rohr for Lori Walsh today. Say a reminder for our listeners in the Northern Black Hills, KYSD-FM Spearfish, 91.9 FM, has to go off the air for maintenance at 11:30 Mountain Time. We're hoping it's just going to be a few minutes, but that's 11:30 Mountain Time. So for those in the Spearfish area, KYSD, be aware. It's coming up in about an hour from now. The question is why. It's the title of a book by former South Dakota lawmaker Stan Adelstein of Rapid City, a businessman who's dedicated his life to the city and the state. He's helped establish Jewish traditions and community in the Rapid City area. As his business grew, Adelstein's participation in social activities grew, as did his involvement as a philanthropist. Well, it's time to find out why. Stan is on his way to our Rapid City stews, but Eric Zimmer, welcome.
Hi, Larry.
And first, why don't you explain the relationship with you and Stan and putting together this book? Why?
Yeah, of course. Well, it's great to be here this morning. I'm a historian from here in Rapid City. I grew up here in town, attended local schools, and went off to Iowa where I did a PhD in American history, and then I returned back to Rapid City and worked for a consulting company here in town called Vantage Point History. And right when I was returning to finish up my dissertation, my friend and colleague and now coworker Eric Abrahamson asked me if I'd be interested in writing a book about Stan Adelstein. And you know, I remember Stan from growing up here in town. He occupied the campaign avenue over on St. Joseph Street there, mm-hmm. and the billboards in Bacon Park when I was young. I didn't know him particularly well, but it was this fantastic opportunity for me to dive into the community that I know and get into the history of this place and learn about a community and a person that that I didn't know so well. So it's been a great opportunity.
What is that process like? Where do you start when you're asked? I mean, you're writing history, but where you may go research facts from books and other sources, but that you're talking to that source one-on-one and meeting. How does that process start?
Absolutely. It's a very interesting challenge. It's a joke I always tell people is that because I'm a historian, I'm most sort of seasoned at hanging out with dead people. You know? Most of the time, I don't work very often with folks who are, you got a live one on the line, you know?
Yeah.
So writing a biography was a new and different challenge for me as a historian and as a writer, but it was also a great new challenge because I got to interact with the subject. You know, there's a way in which having some distance from the past helps you be able to make decisions and piece together the story as you might, but there's a way in which it's great just to be able to check in with somebody and say, you know, did I get this right? And so to your question, we started off the project, as we do all of our projects, with really intensive research, studying up on South Dakota political history, the history of Jewish immigrants to the United States. For me, just learning about Jewish people and life and culture was really important. And then also diving into 85 boxes of Stan and the Northwestern Engineering Company's papers over at his family's company there. And then also doing a series of extended oral history interviews with Stan, with people from his life, and turning that all into this excellent process of research and writing that produced what I think is a great story people enjoy to read.
You know, just from I've been in a local book club for a number of years, and we everyone suggests stories, so you get a different sort of book and that you might not normally pick out. But one of the things that I've learned and watched for is the construction, how an author constructs a story. Now, this would be very easy to do a timeline story, and there is that in the book, why, there is that timeline sense, but you do jump around and connect different people and sometimes foreshadow the end of the story. But talk about that book construction and when you got your research together, how you decided to piece this together.
Absolutely. So you're absolutely right. The easiest way to write any book, especially a history book, is to start way back and move in a linear way towards the present. But one of the things that we learned is that Stan's life didn't really follow that pattern. He lived this remarkable, eclectic life that went, did everything from being really involved with recreating Rapid City here in the 60s and early 70s to meetings with at the White House, to going to Israel and meeting with the former Prime Minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, and others. And the way his life bounced around forced us to try to pick out, you know, the handful of stories. And when I say handful, I'd say there's 40 or 50 great sort of inside stories about South Dakota, about the U.S., United States politics, about international Jewish affairs that we wove together and tried to situate within the broader arc of his family's life and then his life to be able to make all of that work as a story.
Let's talk about some of those turning points. You know, in the introduction to the book, you get this meeting between Stan, there's a representative group in Israel, and David Ben-Gurion, and his question is, why do you live in South Dakota? A little background when you heard that story. When can you set that up for us?
Yeah, so this is a moment where I wish Stan was here to tell it, because it's a fantastic story, and it ended up creating the title to the entire book. So just so your listeners mm-hmm. are aware, basically the book opens with a little preface by Stan that explains how the book got its title. And what happened was in 1965, Stan was 32 years old, and he went with his wife Ida to Israel on the first trip by a group of 22 different young couples from the United States to visit Israel and sort of interact as emissaries from the American Jewish Committee. And at that time, it was actually very unusual for a group of American Jews to be interacting in that way with Jewish folks in Israel because of some broader political sort of, you know, conversations and disagreements between those two separate groups of folks. And so Stan's there, and you know, he's a Jewish guy from South Dakota. And if your listeners aren't aware, if people from South Dakota aren't aware, South Dakota actually has the fewest Jewish people of any state in the Union. A recent estimate that Stan shared with me is that there's about 300 Jewish folks in South Dakota today, which is, if not the least, you know, very low. Mm-hmm. And so when he was in Israel and traveling around to these different cities and meeting all these different dignitaries and political types, people would walk up to him and ask him where South Dakota was. They'd say, how'd you end up there? Where is that place? What is that place? And he actually got so used to this question that he drew a little map in his pocket. And, you know, sort of was a map of the United States that pointed out where South Dakota was in the country. And so David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel when the Jewish state was founded in 1948, starts walking up to Stan. They're milling around at this party. And Ben-Gurion walks up to Stan, and he says, you know, he's about to ask a question, and Stan assumes he's going to ask, like everybody else does, you know, where are you from? And he walks right up to Stan. Stan reaches in his pocket, and Ben-Gurion holds up his hand, and he says, the question isn't where, the question is why. And Stan looks at him and sort of, as he told it to me, blurts out, well, it's my mission as a Jew. And what this meant for Stan was that Ben-Gurion, who was a Zionist, who believed that all Jewish people should move back to the Holy Land, that they shouldn't be in places in the United States. Mm-hmm. If you remember, this is right on the tail of the Holocaust, and there's this whole movement around the Jewish state. And he's basically saying, why are you out there in the world when you should be here with us, you know, building this state? And Stan says, you know, for whatever reason, my family's story took us to this rural part of Western South Dakota, and my job is to be there and to live out my Jewish values as I understand them in this rural place. And that's how we ended up with the title of the book, The Question Is Why.
You know, and after reading that forward, as I was getting into the book, I was wondering if it was that my mission as a Jew that brought him to Western South Dakota, and then life happened around that, or vice versa. I was watching that, and let's talk about that a little bit. We're talking about the book, Why. Eric Zimmer is here, co-writing the book with Stan Adelstein, and hopefully we're going to see Stan here in the next few minutes, but we'll get back and talk about that and some very interesting stories about South Dakota and that Jewish life in South Dakota coming up after this break. This is In the Moment on SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Larry Rohr for Laurie Walsh today. The question is why? It's a new book by Stan Adelstein and Eric Zimmer, who helped write the book, ericzimmerhistory.com. More on Eric. Stan, we had a chance to visit briefly a few weeks ago at a Hall of Fame event out in Keystone. It was great to see you, and thank you for being with us today in Rapid City. Laurie wasn't able to be here, but I had a chance to read through the upcoming book. And we've got about 10 minutes or so left, and I've got some questions I want to have you tell us more about the book. Take us back to that meeting with David Ben-Gurion when you said being in South Dakota was your mission as a Jew. Did that statement you said, did that surprise you? What did you mean by that?
Well, when I said that, when he asked me, South Dakota, I started to take my little map out of the pocket that people had been asking me, and then he said, no, the question isn't where, the question is why. And this mission thing just came out of my mouth.
Did that surprise you when you said that?
Yeah, I was very surprised when I said that. And then he compounded it. What he wanted to said, well, what is your mission? And I said, the Torah, the Bible, actually in Isaiah, says you should be a light to the nations. And that apparently was, I was supposed to turn on the bulb.
Yeah. Well, you know, that bulb had already come on because your involvement with the American Jewish Council and some of the activities you've already been involved in, which got you on that trip. But there's a very interesting history from the Edelstein to the Adelstein family coming to the United States, Eastern Iowa, business in Western Iowa. Your grandfather and father with business in the interior and Rapid City area. But on the discussion of the Jewish faith side, Stan, I was very interested to read how your outlook was impacted by Ida's experience. And what did you learn from her about that Jewish mission and that aspect of your life from your wife?
From which her is it that you're talking about?
Ida.
You know, Ida never really escaped from the experience of escaping.
From the Holocaust experience.
Her family left Poland after the Nazi occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Jews in Poland, which was the largest Jewish community in the world, could not speak Polish without an accent. But we kind of think of it as the New York Yiddish accent in English. Her mother not only was able to speak Polish, but she could speak fluent German because she lived in Berlin. And in Germany at that time, there was quite a class difference between Berlin German. So they ended up passing as being non-Jewish for almost 3 months. Not necessarily hiding in full view. They were an established family, but the whole process. Then she traveled around the world for 18 months. When you talk about what's going on today, that vibrates in my heart, that an immigrant escaping is not welcome all of a sudden.
How did that experience, when you began to understand that, and share your lives together, how did that, her experience change? Did it change your point of view?
You know, that was only part of it. I'd had my own experience growing up, because when I was in my teens, I came to realize that while I was playing in Wilson Park in Rapid City, that half the children who were Jewish in the world were murdered, and the world was silent.
Was that part of your mission, is to break that silence?
No, it's a lot of things. It has to do, there's a Jewish expression, it's fair words, tikkun olam. Tikkun olam means to help, or it literally means to heal the world. So that sort of came into my being as I grew older and had a chance to accept to have the opportunities, the really almost divine opportunities that are given to Jews in this country in general, in South Dakota in specific, and in Kadoka with a huge impact.
There's a couple of things in the book I've been looking forward to hearing you talk about. And right at the beginning of the chapter, about halfway through, a chapter called The Continuing Struggle, there's a quote from an interview that you gave in 1978, a magazine interview, about the Jewish community surviving in Rapid City and not becoming invisible. And I thought that was an extraordinary statement that was included in the book. Explain about that, your effort to make sure that the Jewish community would not be invisible.
I could not help but react to the fact that if we were silent and absent, then we would be agreeing with those that said that Jews should be no more. And in Rapid City, there were so many, many opportunities that were available. It goes back even to the founding of the United Way from the Rapid City community chest. I was asked to try and organize something different, and that just is one example.
I know, and for those who are looking forward to, first let me ask, what's the, Eric or Stan, what's the projected publication date on the book?
It's August 19th, which is Stan's 88th birthday.
Oh, okay.
88th.
Yeah, because we had a chance to look and read through an advanced copy, and there's a much more in-depth discussion of that involvement of the Ku Klux Klan and other activities leading up to this point. But that not becoming invisible, it seemed to me like another one of those statements that you had said to David Ben-Gurion that actually brought a lot of the activity of your life outside of business into focus. One of the things I want to ask about, because one of your forays into the political world, tell the story about your involvement with Archie Gubrud. That might be for historian, political history, your involvement and how you saw his rise to the governor's office play out.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, I've been...
Talk about working with Archie Gubrud to get him elected.
Yeah, with Archie, yeah.
Oh, well, I was a young Republican, and I didn't know anything much about politics. I still don't, I think. But Archie was not expected to be governor. Ralph Herseth was a Democratic-seated governor and very popular. So I learned some of the mechanics of get out the vote and set up the first get out the vote program in Rapid City. It's more detailed than that in the book, but so I helped get him elected. Not only that, but I happened to loan somebody the car that he was hit in. Didn't know who was an assigned driver, but anyway. And so he was at Bennett Clarkson Hospital, and there I sort of had some fun. We hung out a wreath on the side, Gubrud for governor, and then we ended up with a deal saying, Archie can't campaign for himself. He's in bed with a broken pelvis. And it was a matter of as an engineer, it was kind of the numbers of what counted. Mm-hmm. And we turned out the vote. And he came to the river about 4,500 votes behind. He left the river as a governor-elect.
Well, you got the taste there and just couldn't spit the bit until you served, ran for office yourself. Did you enjoy that experience in Pierre?
Did you enjoy serving in Pierre?
Oh, did I enjoy serving in Pierre? 87.4% of the time, it was wonderful. 5% of the time was terrible, and that gets you up to about 89.5%. And the other 10.5% was sort of interesting.
and that's published in the Daily Journal of the State Legislature. You know, when you've had a chance to go and talk with Eric and put this life story together, the question that you got to ask is, if you knew then what you know now, any other changes or detours that you might have taken along the way?
You know, Eric was a wonder. You couldn't have had a better writer or a better thinker. Eric's experience of the Jewish people was limited. Mm-hmm. Our culture was really somewhat foreign to him, and he began to get the He didn't begin. He had the great understanding and a very caring way to use the words that would come in. People would ask me for quotes, why don't you write a book? Well, I can't write a book. I'm an engineer and I mostly can count. And even that not always go too well.
Yeah.
But yes, as I began to go through the book with Eric, then about 2 weeks after I had read the final manuscript, it occurred to me, this book wasn't about me. It was about the United States of America. I'd been moved very deeply from reading about George Washington visiting the Jewish congregation in Newport, Rhode Island. and what he said there. And here I was 200 years later beginning to really implement what he'd said about that. And it's the only country in the world, mm-hmm. only country in the world, where Jews have this opportunity. And frankly, it's a terrible thing to say, but that's what made the disaster in Pittsburgh, long after the book was finished, not too long, so amazing.
We're running out of time here. I know I look forward to visiting with you again and maybe having a cup of coffee and talking more about that, or come back and see us on the air. The question is why? Stan Adelstein with Eric Zimmer. The book will be published August 19th.